by starpublications.com. That's star with two R's. I'm your host, Dr. Joyce Starr, author of books on wide-ranging topics, including Defend Your Condo and Homeowner Association Rights, and publisher of the first Homeowner's Defense Kit. I also offer telephone consultations on condo and homeowner association problems. Our topic today, hotel security in the aftermath of the hotel attacks in India. What will it take to improve hotel security? Are you safe? If you're planning a vacation or any other type of travel that involves a hotel, you don't want to miss this show. Our guest is David G. Benton, Vice President and General Manager of Philadelphia's Rittenhouse Hotel and Condominium Residences, considered one of the finest small hotels in the world. The Rittenhouse has better security than the majority of small hotels. Now, a little bit about David before I introduce him and say hello officially, and that is that he's worked in so many hotels, at the Lex Hotels in London, India, the Lex Hotel and the Chateau Louis Resort in Illinois, the Americana Hotels, the Fiesta Americana Hotels. He's worked in Wisconsin. He's worked as now as the general manager of the Amerimar Enterprises from 1985 to present. So welcome, David.
Oh, how are you, Joyce?
So glad to have you with us today.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
And such an important topic and so timely.
Yes.
Well, can you give us a little bit of background on the Rittenhouse, how it evolved? It's a condominium, part hotel.
Yes, we opened in 1989 with 98 hotel rooms and 160 condominiums. And looking back now, in nearly 20 years, we were really one of the first hotels that offered complete hotel services to all of our condominium owners. There were about a half a dozen hotels, or vertical hotels, that did it in those days. And now, of course, it's become very popular as people like the lifestyle of living privately but having access to, you know, room service and a health club and, you know, three or four fine dining restaurants and a limousine and the concierge service, laundry and newspapers delivered, and even taking, you know, one's dog for a walk.
You do that, too?
We do that, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when you formed as a condominium, part hotel, were there major problems of bringing the two together? Or, I know it's a condo association.
Well, we had the, you know, the Pennsylvania Condominium Association law, which we followed, but there wasn't much precedent on how the hotel services should be delivered, you know, to the condominium owners. And also how the expenses, you know, should be allocated. So, you know, after about 6 months to a year, after a little bit of trial and error and kind of, you know, getting a few bruises on the way, we settled down to a format so that we know, you know, how the expenses should be allocated and what's the best way of delivering the services, you know, to the condominium owners. One kind of wrinkle, for instance, that we didn't realize when we opened this building, we certainly was not hard to deliver room service, but because the condominium owners are not part of the perimeter of where we're allowed to serve liquor, we're not allowed to serve wine or spirits or beer to the condominium owners. So if they order a nice dinner from us, they have to supply their own liquor, you know, in their own condominium. It's illegal for us to bring liquor upstairs because it's in a private residence. So there were, you know, lots of little niggly things like that we kind of learnt and got under control, as I say, in about a year, and then it was kind of smooth sailing, you know, from then on.
Our listeners may be interested to learn that is perhaps one of the primary reasons, that is the condo association, that your hotel was concentrating on security from the get-go.
Well, we certainly have more than what a typical 98-room hotel has, and I won't obviously go into all of the details because that would kind of give away some of our trade secrets on how we secure this building, but we do have a 24-hour command center that's fully manned. We certainly have an inordinate amount of video cameras in the building, and many, many more people patrolling than, again, would be typical, primarily because we're very conscious of the safety of the condominium owners, and we have very high-profile guests stay with us, and we feel, to make them feel secure, we do have, you know, great backup in our security department. In fact, many of the questions that many of our celebrity guests and dignitaries have is, you know, tell us about your security. And when their people come in, usually on a pre-visit, they usually walk away very impressed with the amount of security we have and the kind of programs and procedures and equipment we have that will keep, you know, the people that they're responsible for secure.
I know that you have a Pavarotti suite, so we can at least tell people that this was a favorite hotel of Pavarotti's. Would that not be true?
Yes, he loved to come here. We have certain suites with full kitchens, and Maestro Pavarotti liked to cook, and he loved to have friends up to his suite, and we supplied, you know, all the pots and the pans and all of the Italian foods that he loved. And he was quite a great chef, and it was always a great pleasure and honor having the maestro in the house.
Isn't that wonderful? So he certainly was interested in high security, and not to mention a few high-profile actors, if we can mention any of their names. I don't know, but I know you've had some very exciting people staying in the hotel.
Well, the most recent where security was at the highest level was President George Bush Sr., was here, and President Mikhail Gorbachev. President Bush was here to give the Philadelphia Liberty Medal to President Gorbachev, and they both stayed here for a number of days, and each one brought their own contingent. Obviously, President Bush had his Secret Service contingent, together with the local police dignitary unit and police sheriff's office, and of course President Gorbachev brought his people from Russia to make sure he was also very well protected.
Now this isn't typical for most hotels, especially most small hotels. They don't have this high profile level of guests.
A few do, not too many. Certainly in certain hotels, like the Waldorf Astoria in New York, that is a great favorite of world leaders. They have, you know, very specific protocol and where they house these dignitaries and how they're protected. And some hotels around the country that are relatively new have, you know, different escape routes and other ways that if there is a problem, that, you know, an older hotel wouldn't have that kind of facility. So, you know, people have become very, very conscious of security since, particularly since 9/11. And, you know, people are focused on it, which has made hoteliers focus on it, I think, more than they have ever done in the past.
So you actually have to be in a position or have key staff in a position to negotiate with the security contingent for these high-profile guests.
Yes. The typically, you know, the Secret Service will come in a couple of weeks before. They will meet with our people. They will do a survey. They will take certain information about people who will be serving the dignitaries to make sure that they pass the test. And they coordinate very, very closely, you know, with our people. But we always take a step back and allow them to do their jobs because they're the real professionals. And we're there in support with all of our people and all of our security people to assist them in any way whatsoever. For instance, you know, when we do have a dignitary come in, Our security will hold the elevator so that the dignitary is not standing for the elevator, because then, of course, he or she is exposed. So they come right in, whisk them up in the elevator, and when that dignitary goes out for dinner or leaves the hotel, then again, the elevator is waiting for him. And that's just kind of one of the ways that, you know, we cooperate with, you know, with the Secret Service or any other, you know, protection.
What types
I must say, though, that when we had the royal family, members of the royal family here, it was rather interesting because they kind of downplay the security. Of course, they're very, very good in what they do, but they downplay to an extent that kind of makes the American security people a little bit nervous, I must say that.
Why do they downplay?
Well, they think that it's everything's going to be okay, and that, you know, they've done their research, they've covered their bases, and they rely upon, you know, the local police force and the hotel security to supply most of the protection.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I would think that they'd be a bit more overly protective.
Well, they, you know, part of it is you know, stiff upper lip and all that.
Uh-huh. And where, you're from England, so you would know.
Yeah, and it's like, it's not the done thing to make a big fuss over these kinds of things, you know.
Oh, dear.
So it's there, but it's a lot of it's kind of really, really behind the scenes. And again, the Americans, when we've met with them at meetings prior to them coming, and the Americans are a little bit surprised at the approach that the Brits take in this fashion. You know.
So you have to really have time on hand to deal with the local police, perhaps even much more than the local police. And it's you yourself, or do you have a team around you?
Well, we have a director of security,
okay.
And he typically meets, and then I will meet with them at some point, make sure that they feel comfortable. And usually, because I greet these dignitaries, you know, then obviously, you know, I want them to know who I am, that I'm not just standing in the lobby with some kind of bad intent.
Mm-hmm.
And so we meet with them. We talk about, you know, where I should be standing. You know, they don't ever want me standing outside, because then that dignitary has to stop on the outside, then they're more exposed. They'd rather, you know, meet me in the lobby where it's safer.
Can he stop for a while in the lobby?
Well, maybe 2 or 3 seconds to
okay.
say hello, and then I'll escort them to their suite.
Now, what about the FBI? Do you find yourself coordinating with the FBI as well?
They do. Typically, you know, we talk to them prior to one of these dignitaries coming, and
mm-hmm.
they'll give us a threat level. If there's anything happening, or if they believe anything's happening, they certainly will let us know to be on the alert, and we'll contact them and, you know, say, you know, what's the threat level on this particular person coming in? And you know, typically in Philadelphia, it's about zero, to be honest with you.
But if it was higher, would you be able to implement extraordinary standards or different ways of handling it?
Well, we would then take direction from them because, mm-hmm. you know, again, they're the professionals. You know, obviously we don't carry any arms.
Mm-hmm.
They do. And again, we would take direction and take a step backward and let them direct us because, again, they know what they're doing, you know, when it comes to something like a threat level.
You mentioned the vetting of the staff. That's very
yes.
interesting. I wanted to just say more about that.
Well, typically, you know, as an example, if they want to know who is going to be the breakfast room service waiter,
mm-hmm.
who's going to be delivering breakfast, and then we have to give certain information about that waiter, and they will check him or her out and make sure that he or she is suitable and not a threat to that dignitary.
So in a sense, not exactly a security clearance, but they have to be cleared by security.
Well, I can assure you, when the Secret Service checks that room service waiter out, he is squeaky clean. Yeah, believe me. And also, Pryor should mention they also typically bring dogs in for bomb sniffing and those kinds of things too. You know.
Now, does this make your guests nervous, or the condo residents nervous, or they feel actually better about it?
I think actually, you know, people get very excited when dignitaries come to the hotel. And it doesn't matter who you are, but, you know, when Gorbachev walks through the lobby, or Pavarotti, or Bruce Willis, or Prince Andrew, people stop and just stare, and, you know, they're very excited, and then they go off for lunch and say, guess who I saw in the Rittenhouse Hotel lobby yesterday?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people get very excited, you know. Some of them work out in our fitness center, and the condominium owners that are kind of on the next treadmill, they're telling everybody for weeks, you know, I was on the treadmill next to so-and-so, and, you know, this kind of thing, you know.
Well,
so it becomes exciting.
How about a high-profile actor like Bruce Willis? I mean, does he require extra security? Does he bring a security contingent with him?
Yes. Yeah, he does. There's, you know, very strict protocol.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when he's here, and most of the people come under fictitious names. The last person we had, he listed himself as Bud Light. And the one prior, 2 weeks before, her name was Ann Chovy.
Okay.
So a lot of them, you know, have these kind of fun names. Mm-hmm. And so if they say, is Mr. So-and-so staying here, we honestly can say no, because, you know, that person could be Bud Light. And mm-hmm. and often they'll change their names depending where they are, so people don't get used to knowing that that person is now going under this particular name.
Well, that was one of the biggest problems in India, going right to the heart of the issue, is
yes.
that the terrorists, of course, managed to get a hold of the guest records very quickly.
Yes, yes.
And you and I talked about that and
yes.
ways of preventing it, what to do.
Well, it's very difficult because, you know, if I can just take you back to British common law, and back in the 1600s, it was illegal to stop a traveler from coming into the inn. Travelers would either be on horseback or in a cart or walking, and as soon as the sun set, it was very dangerous to be on the roads because of the people who would hold you up and you know, take your possessions or worse. And the only real safe haven was to stay in the inn. And it was illegal for the innkeeper to not allow people to come into the inn. Well, that British common law still prevails today in America in a different format. But if somebody comes in and has credit or cash, and there's no reason, like they're not, you know, drunk or something like that, and you have to give them a room if you have a room available and they're willing to pay the price. Again, going back to British common law of the 1600s.
Interesting.
So it's you know, if that person has, you know, wants to commit some kind of you know, bad act, and you know, they obviously know that typically, you know, registration cards are obviously kept at the front desk because that's where people register.
Right.
And they're very handy. So if you have someone there who, you know, pulls a gun in front of the front desk clerk and says, give me your registration cards, I mean, you know, what does one do, you know?
Well, what does one do in light of what's happened in India?
Yeah.
You know, do you think that hotels will be rethinking this, or how to deal with this, computerizing it in some type of encrypted way?
Well, it's possible, but again, the registration card, you know, does state the person's name, and it does state the rate that they're paying, and it does state the length of stay.
But it's a physical card?
It's a physical card that guests are required to sign, and that becomes like a legal contract
mm-hmm.
with the guest. So I'm not sure, you know, how one would change that format, but I think certainly people are rethinking because from our perspective, it seems that, you know, airports are now extremely well protected, embassies are well protected, government installations are, and if you look at the last, you know, few situations, it has been luxury hotels, primarily, you know, India and the Far East. So they're certainly, you know, becoming targets, and that's giving people, you know, food for thought. Now, the Marriott in Islamabad that was bombed, they are now building a 16-foot high wall around the hotel so that no one can drive a truck bomb into the building. So they're taking some pretty drastic action to try and avert, you know, another tragedy.
It would be very difficult for most American hotels, wouldn't it? It would
be very hard. And again, hotels are public places.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody can come in for a cup of coffee. Somebody comes in and registers. Somebody comes in, you know, to go to the hairdresser. Somebody's coming in to meet somebody who they say is staying there. What does one do? Again, it is a public area, and people do have the right of access into a hotel's lobby. You know.
But
otherwise,
coming back to those cards, maybe what the security gurus of the world are going to have to do is take these issues one by one, and the cards being one of those issues, perhaps the most important at this point, other than access, and that is find a way to encrypt immediately. Destroy and encrypt, perhaps.
Yes. Or maybe not scan and encrypt. Yeah. Or maybe not have them available until the guest actually shows up, and then they're in some kind of computer, and you only print them out, you know, when the guest shows up.
Or can't they be put in some, you know, incredibly secure lockbox the moment that they're signed?
It could be, but again, if someone's pulling a gun on you and says, you know, open up the lockbox, we've obviously instructed our people, do whatever they say to do, and you know, don't get hurt.
Oh, this is very dangerous.
It is. It's a very difficult situation, especially after 9/11. Everybody was questioning, you know, what to do. Some hotels do take an ID card. So when you check in, they ask for your ID.
Meaning your driver's license?
Driver's license, passport, something like that, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. As you know, in Europe, they always ask for a passport in Europe, you know.
But then is the guest less secure because more information has been given, especially a passport?
Well, certainly in Europe, many hotels keep your passport until you leave.
All the better to find Americans.
Yeah, exactly.
Easily, and Brits, right?
Yeah, because I think in some countries, you know, the local police and other people, you know, may come and check and, you know, just for their own benefit. So I'm not sure if that still happens today, but certainly when I traveled a lot in Europe, you know, you always left your passport at the front desk until you checked out.
So now should we be telling people try not to leave your passport at the front desk? After all, if they argue it's their right not to leave it, shouldn't it be their right not to leave it?
I'm not sure if in those countries it's the law that you have to leave it, and then the hotel really has no choice. But, you bring up a very good point, and I think people now are going to be, you know, just as we've been talking about going green for the past 3 years and people are beginning to adopt certain practices, I think there's going to be a whole nother realm of roundtables and discussions on, you know, what can one do to improve security without treading on someone's, you know, civil rights, civil liberties, or just inconvenience.
Now, if one of your trained employees, and you mentioned to me, we want to go into this too as well, that they're trained to look, to be vigilant.
Yes.
Correct. But if one of these trained employees, in fact, they're all trained, should notice something that's askew and the behavior, they don't have a bad feeling about it, what happens? How does it all work itself out?
Well, it starts from the fact that, let's say a typical hotel has 2 to 3 officers patrolling, you know, the grounds now in the hotel. Let's say it's a resort, a 400-room resort with 2 golf courses. That's an awful lot of ground to cover for 2 or 3 men. I mean, it's sort of impossible. So you say to yourself, well, if 3 men can only do so much, you know, how can we be more secure? So one trains all of the staff, and let's say that hotel has 300 employees. You train all of the staff in the kinds of things they should be looking for, kinds of behavior, bad behavior, packages being left, luggage being left, guest room doors being left open, what have you. And so instead of having 3 or 4 men patrolling, you actually have 300 people who are acting as security officers, and if they do see something that doesn't look right or doesn't smell right, then immediately call security to for investigation.
Now, you say that they're trained, but do they go to through a training program that's outside of the hotel? Do people come in to train them? How does that work?
Most hotels do it within and say, you know, they still have their job to do. And you say, here are the 10 things you should be looking for. And if you see any of these 10 things, that's the time to call security. And if you're not sure, we'd rather you call security than not. So don't be embarrassed if what you're looking at just turns out to be nothing. We'd rather know that than not know that. So don't be afraid to call security. You know.
Now, when they're calling security, are they calling one or two, or there's three people that they can call at any one time?
Well, they would call the security office.
The office. Now, what if the office was under siege? Or what if they couldn't get to the office? Do they carry a cell phone? What do they carry to get them into that communication so that it can be done quickly?
If they couldn't call the office for whatever reason, then they would call the operator.
Mm-hmm.
And then the operator would call, you know, one of the senior managers to investigate.
All right. We talked about the blueprints again.
Yes.
You know, terrorists want access to the blueprints of this of any hotel that they're targeting,
right.
Of course. And I brought up with you during our pre-show conversation, should hotels make blueprints available to external forces, security forces? And if so, when? During an attack? Before an attack? When, in fact, they could be even stolen from those secure offices?
Yeah, I think that's a very good idea, and certainly if the police department had a copy of the inside of the hotel in an easily readable format, I think that's an excellent idea. In fact, one would even maybe bring the police and fire department over to actually tour them so that it wouldn't be strange to them when they do come into the hotel to really understand the layout, where the stairwells are, how the elevators work, and you know, all of the entrances and et cetera, so that if something did happen, they'd be very familiar with what they were facing.
Well, my concern was, I think that they, of course, need access to those blueprints, and you've articulated it very well, but my concern was if a copy, per se, was sitting in the police station, the local police station, or available to several government agencies, that's not secure. I mean, I would be a little worried about that as a hotel manager. So where is the balance between providing it and when to provide it?
Mm. Well, I guess it would depend on how you would see the threat level, you know.
Okay.
You know, if you're in a little small town in the middle of Iowa or Wyoming, you know, would the threat level be there? Or, you know, versus being in a major American city. So, you know, and I think if you went, you know, to the local police certainly in Philadelphia, I'm sure it would be, you know, very secure.
Okay.
Because obviously it's a huge police force and, you know, they certainly have, you know, the professionalism to secure items. So I wouldn't be hesitant to do that.
You wouldn't be hesitant to provide it before?
No, not to our local police
force. And you feel that might be an approach for other hotels around the nation?
I think it's an excellent idea. Excellent
okay.
idea.
All right.
In fact, you know, when one of the ways that we did coordinate with the local police force is after 9/11, we developed a shelter-in-place program and procedures, and of course we had an assembly point, and then how did we deal with that assembly point to isolate it from any airborne, you know, gas or biological weapons.
You have that in the hotel?
Yes.
So that's very encouraging for guests.
And we did coordinate with the expert in that field and showed him the plans and showed him, you know, what we intended to do. And, of course, he made some comments and we edited and adjusted our approach. And then it did have the sanction of this expert who works, you know, with the Philadelphia Police Force. So we have a very good shelter-in-place program, you know, for the hotel guests, the employees, and the residents.
Enough space to accommodate everyone.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, that's amazing.
Absolutely, with provisions, you know, in case you know. Typically, they say I think it's about 8 hours before a biological, you know, airborne kind of situation would dissipate. You know.
Well, considering that you don't cover 9 square blocks, you're not, you know, that large. That's really amazing that you can accommodate all of those people in a safe, secure area.
Yes.
Something.
Yeah.
Well, what about installing weapons and explosive detectors?
Good question. I mean, it's I guess it's how far does one go, and you know, how does one apply it, and you know, again, I think that's going to be, you know, on the table for discussion on, you know, on the application. You know, not just for hotels maybe, but also for, you know, office buildings and arenas, venues, you know, for sports and concerts, you know, that, again, you might see in 5 or 10 years those kinds of things in place. I mean, whoever thought 15 years ago the kind of security we'd have at the airports today, you know, would I don't think anybody would have ever thought we would have put in what we have now at the airports, you know.
But does this does the initiative come on the part of the hotel? For example, now you've seen this situation unravel, and everyone is more vigilant and worried. So does the hotel say, you know, we better start looking into installing weapons and explosive detectors, or does a hotel, yours or any other, say, well, we'll wait and to see what the U.S. government tells us or the local police tells us? What happens here?
Again, I think it's sometimes the chicken and the egg, but I think it depends on the, you know, on the kind of threat level. I mean, if you're sitting in Amman, Jordan, or you're sitting in Bangkok, you know, you probably have a much higher nervousness level than sitting in Philadelphia or Chicago at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think people will take, you know, the appropriate action, you know, again, based upon where they think the threat level, you know, is. But I think what typically happens is the major brands, because they have, you know, corporate offices and access, you know, to research and development, typically the major brands will begin to introduce things. And then, you know, as those initiatives are developed, often then, you know, others follow, and saying, you know, this is probably the right thing to do, and at the same time guests are, you know, demanding it. So, you know, one has to listen to your customer and say if that's what they need, then, you know, we will certainly install, you know, more provisions for safety for our guests.
How can guests be better warned that something is happening? One story, by the way, which I intend to quote-unquote blog about, is a gentleman who was at one of these two hotels, the Oberoi, actually.
Yes.
And he's a stubborn guy, and it was late at night, and they came knocking on his door, and he was tired, and he didn't feel like opening it or answering it.
Yes.
So he ignored the knock.
Yes.
He saved his own life.
Yes.
He slept, I mean, he wasn't asleep, but he was ignoring them. So, but there was no warning. He didn't have any idea that he was about to be held hostage.
Yes. Well, the one thing here, and I believe in you know, if not most hotels in America, is that you know, we have a fully sprinkled and hardwired smoke detectors,
mm-hmm.
and with that comes a loudspeaker system.
Correct.
So if the, for instance, if the fire alarm goes off, there is a message that talks about the fact, you know, that the fire alarm has gone off, and depending what floor the alarm went off, the floor above, the floor below gets one message, and the other floors get a different message. And if no fire alarm is going off, we can use that loudspeaker system, which goes to every condominium and every guest room, and we can use that to be able to communicate with everybody in the building, and let them know, you know, what's going on. And certainly that's one of the devices we use for a shelter in place, to let people know that, you know, they should assemble in this one area. And it's very easy then to communicate to everybody in the building that way.
That's very comforting.
Yeah. The other item is that we used to have these walkie-talkies for certain departments, mm-hmm. which were on a different wavelength than, say, the other departments. So if there was a problem, an engineering was on one wavelength, while housekeeping was on another wavelength, and the banquet people were on another wavelength. And now we have radios that can all be switched to the same wavelength. So, for instance, if the fire alarm does go off, or if there is an announcement, then everybody switches to the same wavelength, so everybody can communicate with each other.
If you were in a situation such as they faced in India, and now you have people, really, they don't know whether to leave their room. This gentleman, when he finally understood what was happening, he left his room very quickly, ran down, I think, 16, 18 floors, fire escape, and found his way out of the hotel, though not easily,
yes.
Because most of it was blocked. But if people are all going in the same direction, that could create a disaster as well. Mm-hmm. What would you do?
Well, I've got to say that, you know, one does the best one can, mm-hmm. But the employees are instructed to also, you know, make sure they're safe. And by that time, typically, you know, law enforcement is on site. And well, you know, certainly
in
America they are.
Right, but not in India.
No.
Right.
And in America, then, the law enforcement or the fire chief, they not only do they want to take over, they do take over, and then we follow their instruction, and we just become, you know, we do the best we can to, you know, get guests out, but there comes a point when the employee's safety is as important, and again, by that time, some official who, you know, is trained, you know, completely in this kind of situation takes over. And then they start giving us instruction. For instance, with us, we have an assembly point in another building. If something major happens, and the employees know what to do regarding having employees and guests and residents assemble in the lobby of that other building just down the street, and we have signs to direct people, and then to be able to account for everybody in that other lobby of that other building. So that's kind of what we're meant to be doing, you know, while the either the bomb squad or the fire department or the police, you know, do what they need to do, you know, within the hotel and the condominium.
So in a sense, the employees have to exercise control in the sense that their instinct might be to rush in to help people, but their...
Yes.
Instruction is to move out.
Well,
would that be true?
The instruction is to not put themselves in danger.
Okay.
So yes, they can help, but they must not put themselves in danger. For instance, they wouldn't go into a room that's on fire.
Okay.
You know, they may get a fire extinguisher from that respect to try and put the fire out. But if they didn't have a fire extinguisher, then they certainly should not put themselves in danger.
What about women and children, especially children in this case? Any special provisions, little kids, hysterical children?
Well, that's, hopefully to get them out into safe areas, you know, as quickly as possible. You know, we do know from a condominium side, you know, anybody who needs extra help, maybe they're bedridden or they're in a wheelchair or what have you. So we do have lists of, who is in that condition. So, when the fire department or the police department shows up, we certainly have a list of who needs extra help, who can't, you know, manage to get out of the building by themselves.
Are there multiple exit options in the
Yes. place? Yes. Yes. I mean, there has to be according to the fire code, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes.
But in the case of in India, in the Oberoi, actually the lobby though there was no one in it, it was cut off.
Yes.
At some point.
Mm-hmm.
And there was only one exit in the back, apparently, of the lobby. I don't have the exact details.
Yeah. Well, again, in American hotels, if mm-hmm. you know, fire code, there have to be multiple exits. And certainly in high-rise buildings, there's you know, more than multiple exits. You know, I mean, more than two, let's put it that way, in high-rise buildings typically.
Do you think that it would be wise of guests to ask more questions before they make a reservation at a hotel? And if so, what types of questions should they be asking?
Well, the typical new contract for group business very much talks about security. There are some companies that actually send us a questionnaire about our security, and they won't book their group here unless, you know, not only does it have to be filled in, but they have to review it and think that our security is sufficient for their group. And that's a new phenomena, I would say, in the last 3 or 4 years, that that people are sending those kinds of questionnaires to us. And again, of course, we have to be sometimes not direct, because again, we don't want to have a piece of paper, you know, telling, you know, somebody, you know, exactly, you know, how we deploy, you know,
exactly.
our resources.
I mean, you could receive a request from a group that has very ill intentions.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, but the ordinary, the lone individual, the couple.
Yeah.
What, you know, aside from your hotel, which we now know is probably one of the most secure in the nation, but as they travel throughout the United States, and certainly as they travel throughout the world, what should they be looking for? What should they be thinking about?
Well, I mean, I think the consciousness level is probably, you know, if people are traveling abroad, I think if people, you know, are going to travel abroad to a country where they have to worry that much about security, they're probably not going to travel to that country, to be honest with you.
I don't know. They've been doing it. You know, things happen, and six months later, everybody says it's back to normal.
Yeah.
Somebody told me the day after the attack, well, it's probably the safest place to be.
Yeah.
I wouldn't believe that,
yeah,
but that's the mentality.
But you really wonder. You know, certainly there's no question after there's been attacks in many of these countries, you know, the tourism numbers prove that, you know, it can last, you know, a year or two before they get back to normal levels. So people do have some memories, and again, some people just will not travel to those countries because of the threat, and there's certainly many places in the world to go visit. I think in America, people feel extremely secure and like it'll never happen to me kind of attitude. And I think in America, they do expect the hotels to be, you know, security conscious, and they do have a lot of respect that the local police and fire departments are well trained, and if anything happens, there'll be a very quick response. I think people have a pretty good comfort level in this country about traveling within the country. You know,
what should the individual client do, though? I mean, what is their responsibility as the guest of the hotel? Should they also be vigilant? Should they be careful in certain ways that we might not ordinarily think about? You said one thing you mentioned was don't leave your door open. Well, of course, that's normally good behavior. Don't leave your door open.
Mm-hmm.
But what else might they do?
Well, certainly they should, you know, use the peephole. If there is a knock at the door and someone says room service or housekeeping, they should certainly, you know, use the peephole. And if they don't feel comfortable, then, you know, call security. Because what could happen, for instance, is a guest checks in and we have sent them an amenity, a welcome amenity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they didn't order room service. They get a knock on the door and they say room service. And they think, I didn't order any room service. They look out and there's someone in uniform. And they certainly can call, you know, the operator or room service and say, you know, why is there someone at my door? I didn't order any room service. Well, Mr. Smith, you know, we wanted to welcome you, and we're sending you up a fruit basket and some champagne. Thank you very much. Then they go to the door and open the door.
Okay.
And certainly when they arrive, now bellmen do point out the fire exits to the guests as they get onto the floor, and they certainly should make themselves familiar, you know, with the fire exits, and to make sure if there is a problem, and also to read the instructions on the back of the door, which always talks about if there is a problem, you know, what you should do and how you should proceed.
So, I'm betting that 99% of the people that travel, I've never read anything on the back of the door.
Well, I know you're right, and it's like when you go on the airplane and they give the little 2-minute speech, and most people are listening to their iPod or reading a book.
Right.
So, you know, again, I think people in this country feel very, very secure because of the because of the nature of, you know, how efficient and how modern this country is, and how well equipped our people are.
But lesson learned from India: read what's on the back of the door.
Yeah, they should
know where your fire exits are.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Ask a few questions before you travel to the hotel about, you know, just general security measures.
Yes.
Get, you know, obtain some level of comfort for yourself, because you're dealing with perhaps with yourself, your husband, your wife, your family, your kids.
Yes.
And what about kids? I'm asked before, but now I mean it in the context of, should parents be especially vigilant or do more to protect their children, or do you see parents sometimes being quite careless in this regard?
I think they're more conscious today,
mm-hmm.
you know, keeping kids close by, not letting them run around where they don't know where they are. I think just a general, not necessarily from a point of view of a major disaster, but just, you know, some of the characters that, you know, run around the streets, and just to be very, very careful now of making sure that their children are, you know, kind of within arm's reach of them. There's certainly more of that. Going back to one of your other, it's kind of interesting, because if we did get a call from somebody who was asking multiple questions about our security, I think that would make us very wary, saying, you know, why are they asking these questions? And, you know, so again, you bring up a very good point, because that becomes really a dilemma on how much do you answer and how much do you give away.
Correct.
And you have no idea who's calling you, you know, on the telephone. So you bring up a very good point.
But there's a solution for that, and that is for the hotel to prepare a protocol, a protocol that they feel comfortable with, that doesn't disclose too much, but that could be faxed or emailed or handed to any guest.
Yeah.
And then they're all receiving roughly the same information. The information is controlled.
Yes.
Just because somebody sends a questionnaire asking for more information than most doesn't mean that they deserve to receive it.
Right, right.
I would say that, in fact, bringing up this issue, that hotels might even work with the local authorities to come up with parameters of what should and what should not be disclosed about the hotel, but yet giving guests a level of comfort.
Yes, yeah. I think what happens, too, is I think, you know, the finer the hotel in the eyes of the guest, they feel, you know, the service standards are going to be higher, the personalization is going to be higher, the food is going to be better, the cleanliness is going to be better, the rooms are going to be more comfortable, there's going to be more amenities, and the security is going to be better. And maybe people are lulled into a false sense of security, because they just put security and safety in with all of those other things, and, you know, maybe they shouldn't. Maybe they should question it a little bit more.
Yeah, I know my bathroom's going to be clean, so therefore I feel very secure in the hotel.
That's kind of, local people come to our restaurant and have a wonderful meal, their friends come in from out of town, and they say, oh, you have to stay at the Rittenhouse. Well, they've never seen a room. they've never stayed here, and they don't know the services, but because they've had a great meal in the restaurant, they assume the rooms are great and the service in the rooms is wonderful.
And they
too.
Are great.
Yeah. So it's the same kind of thing. Through association, if those other things are at that, you know, five diamond level, then they assume that the security is also going to be at the highest level, you know.
Right. Now, you visited, I mean, you've been in these hotels in India, I assume.
No, I have not.
Oh, okay. But you've been in India and you've been in hotels in India.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, my sister's been there, but I haven't.
All right. Well, what do you know about these particular hotels, or what might you be able to share in terms of what you've heard from your own colleagues?
Well, in fact, one of my friends was out there because he's actually running about 9 properties on the subcontinent there,
mm-hmm.
and he was in Mumbai that day, and he did know, you know, some of the executives running the Oberoi and the Taj Mahal, and just, you know, very, very distressing. And these hotels are very much the center of town for the affluent businessmen and the elite. And, you know, they'll have afternoon tea and do business. They'll have dinners there and do business. You know, all of the best weddings are at these hotels and all of the big charity events. And they really become the, you know, kind of the social center point, you know, for, you know, top businessmen and the elite of those areas to congregate there. It becomes the thing to do, you know, meet at the bar at 5 o'clock, mm-hmm. at the Taj or the Oberoi. And it happens somewhat in America, but certainly, you know, more so in Europe and the Middle East and the Far East, that these hotels are havens because they do usually have, you know, the finest services and the finest food and the most comfortable surroundings in the city for people to congregate. And because, again, they're so open to the public, they can, you know, very easily become targets. You know exactly who's going to be in these places. It's going to be the, you know, the higher government officials and the top businessmen and the entrepreneurs and the foreign business people and diplomats. And, you know, your demographic is very well known and certainly a very high-profile target. And, you know, certainly with that kind of guest visiting your hotel or staying with the hotel or having a meal there, one has to be, you know, very careful on how much inconvenience, you know, you have in the way of security, because, you know, they're not used to that. You know, they want to come in and do their thing in peace and comfort and not go through, you know, 5, you know, security checkpoints.
Well, perhaps at least one might have helped.
It certainly might have, yeah.
At least one,
yeah.
If not more than one.
Yeah.
Well, David, this has been a very interesting and important conversation because I'm sure that most people, majority of Americans, as you say, and even people worldwide, do not really think about hotel security. It's not on their mind when they're trying to decide or plan on a vacation. And I think you've opened our eyes to what the possibilities might be and the way they should be.
Yes. Yes.
So I am very grateful to you for joining us on this call today, and I want to wish you the best, and I hope that our listeners will visit your website. Can you give us the link to your website?
Yeah, it's www.rittenhousehotel.com.
Okay, and they can also visit rightsradio.com. And they will do a search on your name or on hotel security, and they'll immediately come to the page that talks about this radio show, and they can find out a lot more information on that page. And we hope they will, because it's a terrific hotel, and you've been very kind to share these insights with you.
Thank you very much.
Sorry.
Well, I wish you and your listeners a very, very happy holiday season.
Oh, thank you.
And hope everybody will be, you know, very, very safe in their travels.
All right. Well, David, thank you again.
Thank you, Joyce.
And this is Dr. Joyce Starr with RightsRadio.com.